And good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for spending your valuable time right here, Brighteon TV. I'm your host, David Dubine, Adapt 2030, and this is the Mini Ice Age Conversation. Have you heard about excess consumption yet? Well, you're going to hear about it more and more. It's starting in Kazakhstan, some of the world's largest natural gas reserves on the planet, yet they're telling citizens conserve gas. If you overuse, you're going to be hit with an excess consumption tax and penalty. And when you reach a limit, they're just going to cut you straight off. They're trying to test bed this in one of the countries that has some of the largest gas reserves. Imagine a country that is importing resources versus has those under the ground already. Can you imagine what we're going to go through in global rationing? The UK is on it now. Two tomatoes per person, and they're going to start rationing cards so you cannot jump from store to store to store so you can get 2, 4, 6, 8. Let's talk about that when we come back.
.us and get this. Many watching Brighteon TV will remember the fiery speech from Dr. Alan Keyes at the annual State Republican Dinner that ended in repeated standing ovations. Dr. Keyes has been an articulate and passionate spokesman for faith, convictions, and consistently strong enough to resist the tug of political convenience. Alan pierces through the ethical haze of our time and calls us to stand up for the truth, knowing that you cannot have the right to do wrong. Get your download of Our Character, Our Future, an audiobook by Dr. Alan Keyes, exclusive to the Brighteon TV audience. Dr. Alan Keyes personally read and recorded our exclusive audiobook version of his timeless essays in Our Character, Our Future for this very special promotion. You can order it by going to www.imtv.us and click on special offer. It's available at only $19.95 for a very limited time. You'll not only enjoy a tremendous savings, but you'll get an amazing piece of literature read by Dr. Alan Keyes himself. Get yours today. Go to www.imtv.us and get this Brighteon TV exclusive offer.
Freedom of speech is a basic human right that has been hard won and granted to all law-abiding Americans. As such, we should not take our freedom of speech and expression for granted. This is more important now than ever before, since world governments and the mainstream media often try to suppress those whose opinions differ from the so-called official narrative. Here at BrighteonStore.com, we are dedicated to fighting for every American's right to speak their mind without the fear of censorship or suppression. That's why every purchase you make at BrighteonStore.com supports our pro-liberty video sharing platform, Brighteon.com, so we can keep bringing you all the latest unrestricted videos mainstream media doesn't want you to see. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Ohio Brett here, host of The Ohio Brett Show for God, Country, and Sports on Brighteon.tv. Brighteon.tv, the fastest growing streaming TV network in the world. And the reason why it's so important, because the Lord is using us to get truth out to we the people. Center left, center right, we're uniting like never before. Blacks, whites, Asian, and Hispanics, all uniting on Brighteon.tv. Brighteon.tv. We'll see you soon.
Hey, I'm Clay Clark. We're live here at the Reawaken America Tour. We're getting set up. We're getting ready to accommodate thousands and thousands of people. We're turning every square inch of this facility into seating capacity. It's going to be 100% sold out, and you can watch live on Brighteon TV. That's Brighteon TV. Thank you, Mike Adams.
And welcome back to Brighteon TV. This is Mini Ice Age Conversations. I'm your host, David Dubine, from the Adapt 2030 channel. Now, as we see the constriction of supply chains continue, and you just can't not notice it, everything continues to constrict. There's less of this, there's less availability, prices are increasing. They've switched suppliers, gone to different nations. You're not able to buy some of the same things at the same quality. Well, that's just going to be the trend. We already know that. It's already been forecast out. So if we are going to move from here to there, and the forecast has already been given and how many times broadcast of globalist meetings and TV announcements, as well as just general chatter through the internet scape, it does seem that there's going to be a continued constriction of supply chain shutdowns of business as well as manufacturing, production of raw materials, at least for the next 10 years. And, you know, the way I look at it, I don't know how many, you know, one-time catastrophic events or, you know, black swan events will happen as we progress down. I'm sure we'll have a few. But it looks like they're just trying to extract as much wealth as possible. I'm talking about central bankers and moneyed families for thousands of years. They just move it from the West over to the new BRICS currency system, maintaining the wealth power. And it is a transference. Nothing goes to zero. So when we see our Kazakhstan in the center of the center, along with the Ukraine, Russia, and China, that whole corridor is the most resource-rich area of the planet, at least one of them. Shared resources, shared pipelines, shared banking, shared gold reserves. Wow, what could go wrong with the U.S. dollar, do you think? So there's going to be this new program called excess consumption. It is a limited consumption amount on your part. And then if you surpass that, you're going to be taxed and penalized. And once you go to whatever the certain final range deemed, they're going to cut you off completely. So I wanted to run through a few of these today. And those of you who know, I follow solar cycles and cycles of time based on solar activity affecting society and civilization. This is the current sunspot flow in days going around for about 15 days as a sunspot group's transit over the face of the sun. Now, what's interesting is once these start at more toward the polar regions, once they come into the equator, which they're getting really close now, they've really come much closer to the equator than when the solar cycle started. Once they get in there, the polar magnetic fields are going to reverse, and then we are coming into a low solar activity, low solar minimum, and we'll stay there for a bit. So this food supply crisis, everything else you see on the international stage is a distraction away from these natural cycles and the ability for us to grow food on the planet. So the Kazakhstan officials, you're going to start to know where this country is. Nobody really knew where Ukraine was on the map until the war started. Now all eyes there. You know exactly where it is. Same thing with Kazakhstan. It's in the stands is what most people know. But what's interesting here, the state-owned natural gas company is already having shortages of producing electricity in one of the most resource-rich nations on the planet in terms of natural gas. Yet they're having shortages, so they have to import natural gas. Very much like the United States, it's almost like a U.S. 2.0. Our pipelines have been shattered and shuttered. Offshore exploration, although I'm not a fan of any way, shape, or form polluting the oceans going after oil, has been stopped. Even gas well drilling, anything on public lands has been ceased. So, you know, we sit in very much the same situation in America. We are vast natural resources, but most of them are being put off limits or on a shelf at the moment. And you might have to ask yourself, why? What is this thing that they're trying to get even the United States more on the import side of thing, and also to have you bend and reduce your consumption levels of everything across the board? The messaging's clear. If you won't do it voluntarily, you will be forced to do it. Sunday law has been talked about for quite some time, and there's more chatter about the Sunday law, which all commerce on the planet will be forbidden on Sunday. Again, you'll take out 1/6 of global productivity, 1/6 of resource usage, if you call the Sunday holiday, the Sunday law. So as this comes into play, in addition to the excess consumption tax and penalties, you'll start to see the world shift greatly. You'll need permission to buy an airline ticket. So back to Kazakhstan, excuse me, sometimes I go on those little rants there. Well, Kazakhstan, they're saying there will be no more shortages. We're actually gonna start to use the resources that are beneath our feet here in the country. So the Kazakh officials from Kazakh Gas are assuring everybody that there'll be no more shortages moving forward with the dual investment from Russia and China, setting up pipelines between both. So the transit hubs that we understand as Ukraine coming out of the Caspian and Black Sea areas, with Russia controlling and sending gas through now Turkey, it's going to be the same thing exactly, 2.0. One country is going to have transit pipelines from Russia to China and railways So the United States is going to want to control Kazakhstan much more. That's what I'm saying. You might not hear about it now, but with all of these things coming out, especially with the new news about the consumption tax in Kazakhstan. So here it is on the map. A lot of people, including myself, you know, the only reason I knew about this because I was traveling. I wanted to go to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. There's an enormous amount of ancient ruins there, a lot of electric geology, an enormous amount of petroglyphs, melted buildings from plasma discharge. And it's on the Silk Road. It's one of the oldest traded, continuously trade routes in the entire planet. 4,000 plus years, this place has been a trade route. It's not going to stop today because the U.S. says so. But the energy official, they're boasting. We sit on 3.8 trillion cubic meters of gas, yet they have gas shortages in the country. They can't produce enough electricity. But notice the pivotal role and geographical location that this plays here, right between Russia, right between China, Kyrgyzstan, and then it includes the Caspian Sea Basin. Now, whoever controls this area, just these three countries alone, if they set up their own economies, would dominate the planet. So now we have others that would like to join in on the BRICS currency because U.S. has been naughty with our foreign policy at the barrel of a gun for nearly a century, overthrowing, destroying. You look back at American politics and military might over the last 70 years, it's been a behemoth. But the destruction and agony and just sadness that it's caused across the planet, there's going to be a lot of karma involved with that. So once all these dollars start flooding home, when this BRICS currency kicks off, we're heading into hyperinflation. And with the second alternative, people out of spite are going to drop the dollar. So far, they've had something like 80 nations sign up for the BRICS currency. So the thing I wanted to point out here, the pipeline map that's running through this area, because of the shortages in electrical production, Russia and China in a dual investment project are going to wire Kazakhstan completely for them. So gas can transit through every single possible way, north, south, east, west, southwest, northeast, whatever, in Kazakhstan to bring resources to all nations and shortcut through areas. And if you look at Russia, if you go all the way over to the Kazakhstan border where you see Russia, China, and Kazakhstan in that tri-nation area, they're going to start developing heavily in that area. And that's all the Belt and Road Initiative that stays with some of the rail traffic up there on the railroad Silk Road. So here's what it is. This is the kicker for it. And this is the perfect place to start it. You know, I look at it and say, they're doing it in the UK and they're doing it in Kazakhstan in tandem to see which nations will fight first. Because you have to remember Kazakhstan, go back about 4 months when they were going to limit bank withdrawals and close your account until you could prove you were vaccinated. The entire country flared off to the point they had riots every day. They had to bring the army out. The country completely closed down. They burned banks, killed bankers, burned bankers' houses. The message was clear, don't mess with the money. And suddenly the mandate to access your bank account suddenly disappeared. So now we're over in the UK, which I'll talk about in a minute here. But we want to introduce the social minimum threshold. Get that? This is a key word you're going to start to hear, social minimum threshold. This is going to be your base allotment of either universal basic income or universal basic resource consumption during a monthly 30-day period. If a household or if it's an individual housing unit, like in an apartment complex versus having a house that's freestanding, if the baseline bits of equipment are, and this is so rudimentary, like this is all you get for your home, a cooker, a gas stove, and a boiler. Anything above that? See, that's so scary. They've only given you three items that you're allowed to utilize. Anything above that? If we calculate their standard consumption and you exceed that, they're going to consider that excess consumption and hit you with an excess consumption tax and penalty. And eventually you'll be cut off. So let's say in the first 10 days you utilize your entire supply for the month and then they tax and penalize you and you're paying 3 to 5 times more to get access to that for the next week. And then you reach, whatever magic number they decide. Regardless if you have the money or not, they're going to cut you off. And then next month it winds back to zero again, just like the universal basic income. You know, there's going to be a timestamp on the money and how quickly you'll have to use that money. So just because you get UBI in your account, you're like, yay, I got $8,000, which is worth $8 because of the hyperinflation. Cool. They'll be programmed in there. You're going to have to use this half of it in 30 days. If you don't use it, we're going to subtract it out of your account anyway, and you'll have that next half to another $4,000 to use, you know, through the next 60 days. And at the end of that, it goes to zero. So spend quickly, stimulate the economy, they'll track everything. But anyway, this is so absurd. A cooker, a gas stove, and a boiler. Go figure. Now here's the next flare point on the planet. So Ukraine, obviously, we're looking at that in terms of food production and resources, transiting pipelines. Kazakhstan, the Caspian Sea Basin. Now the oil coming out of here is not really the best. It's really, they call it heavy sour crude, where it takes an enormous amount of extra refining to remove the sulfur out of the oil itself before then it can be put into pipelines and then sold on the international market. Now, some will take it as is. You don't need to remove the sulfur. But a Caspian Sea Basin, and you can see the Kashkan fields, how large those are. I mean, this would be any country's biggest dream to have this under their feet. I mean, this is, you know, endless, endless gas, hundreds of years, centuries full, not relying on imports from another nation. So how does it go here, UK? So how does it dovetail into experiment number two is happening in the UK. So one shopper currently right now can only buy two tomatoes. Yeah, you heard that right. This is in the UK. This includes England and Scotland. And they were making jokes about, oh, Ireland can participate too. You have the same equity to limits of two tomatoes, just like England does. So shoppers at Asada are super generous and can get three items. Now, you're limited on what you can buy. You can buy, now in Asada, you can get three tomatoes, but in other networks and around supermarket chains in the UK, you can only get two tomatoes at a time. But people are pretty smart and ingenious. So if there's a lot of these stores packed in an area, just like, you know, in Knoxville, you can jump from one store to another and another, and it's just the next parking lot down. They're doing the same thing in the UK. So your allotment might be two tomatoes, but grandma will spend the time and run around and go to five stores and get 10 tomatoes. So they're trying to stop this because then they're saying, you're cheating the system. Those two tomatoes were earmarked for somebody else who would have been a single buyer for a single day allotment. You stole their tomatoes, basically. It's the messaging that's being put out. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you're calling people tomato thieves and like tomato bandits because you went to a different store to buy two extra tomatoes to make a dinner? This is the absurdity. But tomatoes are not the only thing. This is the, you know, the big shiny red ones. So they're always, it's going to be easier to do than cucumbers. You know, you say two cucumber, okay, well, that's enough pretty much. Peppers, lettuce, salad bags, broccoli, cauliflower, and raspberries. So they're starting to catch on that people are going to multiple stores. And this is creating quite the, we need to find a solution and track everybody's purchases kind of thing. It's already moved into that. The discussions have already been there. But, you know, this whole digital rationing card's been on the books for quite some time with the COVID, knowing that it would exit out of COVID and, you know, resources being managed globally. Now, what's happening with the UK? It's the lowest amount of vegetables imported since the early or the mid-80s, 1985. Because of weather woes across Spain of record cold and weather woes, record cold and record drought across Morocco. So they're blaming these two countries for not exporting, for holding the vegetables in for their own citizens so they don't get riots on the street. So of course, oh, you're such a resource nationalist. You want to keep all your tomatoes and we're having problem in England. You're so greedy. You're just filling your adjective. But what's scary is they're starting to talk about a national registry in England, in the UK, wider, that you have to present your ID or scan some sort of facial recognition to be able to get your allotment of two tomatoes. Now, once you buy that, it's instantly into a national database registry. So if you go to the next store and you try to buy it really at the checkout counter and you swipe it, you won't be allowed to buy it. It'll say, no, you can't fly. It's going to be flagged on the purchase. You're going to drip. See, they're drip feeding in it with tomatoes here, but then they're using it for natural gas usage in Kazakhstan. It is absolutely the same in two different places. It's all about rolling out consumption limits and getting people used to it penalizing people if they don't adhere to it, if you have workarounds like smart people do. And this is it. You can already see the beginning of it. Now, when does this roll global? Well, it already is. If you look at places like Mozambique, South Africa running with power 9 hours a day, blackouts, you start to see the limit of consumption, electricity, and resources across the planet. Now, is the 9 hours, is it because of mismanagement from Exxon? That's with an O-M, E-X, yeah, it's E-X-S-O-M, not Exxon, E-X-X-O-N. This is Exxon, S-O-M, in South Africa. How can it be that poorly mismanaged where you run out of electricity because you don't have any fuel oils for 9 hours a day? Okay, mismanagement can only explain that to a certain extent. The wealth of South Africa is mind-blowing. With the amount of gold, proven gold reserves in the ground, as well as other, you know, mineral resources down there and the agricultural output, it's one of the breadbaskets of Africa. Yet somehow they find themselves with not enough money to buy, you know, fuels to run their electrical generation plants. Seems planned to me. Again, it's another, you know, cut down on the consumption. Because what if they come back and they say, you know, I'm sorry, you know, we've been out of power 9 hours a day, but if you work with us and you agree to rolling 2 hour blackouts on a schedule forever, we can manage that, okay? And they're like, yes, we can get 7 extra hours of power. We can, you know, turn our businesses back on. We can heat our home, whatever it is. But see, they're going to take so much away and offer you something back that'll be just seem like a godsend in comparison to the shortages experienced. But if you stand it today, nobody would accept 2 hours of rolling brownout for the rest of your life. Going back from 9 hours to two, you would be applauding and going, give us more. Yes, please. So this whole thing about tracking and tracing food purchase, nothing more than get you on a database and get you into a digital rationing card. And the sickest, most vile, ridiculous talk from the newscasters and hosts in the UK is, you know, view this image here. They're actually applauding themselves saying, you know, the older people, when they were kids, had to deal with ration cards after World War II anyway. They're going to get through this better than anybody. So let them be the leaders in teaching everybody how to do rationing. And you know, the old people don't complain a single one word about you having to go to rations again. And the whole thing of patting them on the back. Yeah, you know, we did it once before, the old people, this and that. You know, it's just demeaning the way that they're like, yeah, you can deal with it. Not to fix the problem. Not to address the issues of at hand of just global reductions in food supply. It's just about, you're going to eat it, don't complain, you've done it once before, it's good enough, queen and country. And shut your mouth and get your two tomatoes, now get out of here. Is the messaging across the UK, I'm so shocked, truly shocked. As an American sitting here, you know, across the pond, if you will, look at that as the messaging to the elder generation. I'm like, what a slap in the face. Just deal with it, you dealt with it before. Unbelievable, truly unbelievable, you know, these things that are happening. And then, you know, it comes down to Morocco again, and I am talking about global food shortages here as we come on to the break. Morocco's wheat production has hit, it's a record low in 2022 for the entire nation ever for grain production, ever, the record low. But look at this. The barley crop had reduced 70% from last year. And if you look at the amount of metric tons coming out for the wheat production, I don't really believe it's 15% less than the five-year average. It's going to be a bit more. If they're in some sort of quote-unquote record drought and their barley is 70% reduced, I don't know how wheat could just magically jump ahead and go, oh, don't worry, we're, you know, 65 points ahead of you, but we're in the same ground in the same weather pattern. Huh? That just doesn't make sense. So anyway, it's understandable why Morocco does not want to export. And over the last couple of shows, I had been talking about barley with the UVB radiation losses. So if Australia is absolutely going to have losses because of UVB radiation and changes in, ground penetrating radiation, Australia is already down 33%, again, that number pops up on their barley production. Ukraine is definitely down because of the war. They're not going to be able to plant. What do we have? Argentina, Southern Hemisphere, reduced. Canada struggled last year. Kazakhstan, we don't know where they sit with the grains too much. They had the super freeze. Uruguay, another Southern Hemisphere country, will be affected with the barley production. Down, 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 down. And then the others is Morocco. Not financial advice, but just pure simple subtraction on a first grade level. Plus, minus, supply, demand, there's going to be way less barley. I would bet the price would go up. That's just me. I'm just doing math, not financial advice. But you can see all these areas that will be heavily affected. And now we're starting to see Northern Hemisphere locations. Because you got to remember, barley is not such a widely traded crop like soy, corn, or wheat. So even a little pull out of that supply is going to have a really big effect. So barley, sorghum, millet, and amaranth pricing, I would bet, as well as spelt, would be affected. So these prices on the ancient grain crops are going to roll northward. So after we come back from the break, we'll talk a little bit more about this and how you can protect yourself during these changes.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer? Is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
The Kelly Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Kelly Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Kelly Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Kelly Key. The Kelly Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build a quietest suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at KellyKey.com with free shipping.
Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the Bivy Stick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the Bivy Stick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy Sticks that will be available in America this year.
Hey, and welcome back for the second half of Mini Ice Age Conversations right here on Brighteon TV every Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. David Dubine, your host. Just before the break, talking about the UK tomato rationing, digital get you on the system as an excuse, debacle happening there, as well as the gas shortages in Kazakhstan also to get you to accept limited resources on a monthly basis. Well, suppliers for some of these vegetables going up into the UK are Morocco is a main supplier, as well as Spain. They've had massive cold damage to their crops this year. Morocco, unfortunately, also has been accompanied by a drought. So the Morocco has banned all exports of all foodstuffs, even to other East African nations, let alone the UK. But the UK government's spouting off like, how dare you? Keep all those tomatoes for yourself in your own country. I know if you don't sell to East Africa, that's cool, but we better get our tomatoes. And if your people need to go hungry, that's just too bad. you get our tomatoes up here. And again, these talking points, so demeaning, like talking down to the country, like you let your people starve. We're more important than you. And, you know, this messaging coming out of the UK is just downright scary. It's almost like, you know, schoolyard bully on double espresso that lost their house or something. It's ridiculous. Like, you give us everything, we just don't care anymore. So the suppliers are down there are starting to lose contracts as well, where the government is limiting itself. So you're starting to see the same thing happen in Morocco. Okay, they're limited on food supplies there. If you lose your business, your small family-run business, because they can't facilitate contracts and you're in litigation, too bad. We saw that all through COVID, did we not? I personally think, just my opinion, that it was a purposeful destruction of all mom-and-pop businesses, small, medium businesses, because you're only reliant. There's only box stores left. And you know they're going to do their own mandates outside governmental laws where, you know, it's a store policy. You're really railroaded and cattle corralled into just box stores right now. Big corporate entities control all the supply chain. That's really all that's left. There might have been a couple that reopened. And I don't really consider Trader Joe's a mom-and-pop store, but it's back open. But to go to the very local stores, you know, a huge swath of those were removed during COVID. So now what happens when you're going to have to jump through hurdles and fire hoops to get into the box stores on the next emergency, whatever it is? But you can see this swinging across many nations. Now, here's the thing I didn't understand. Even though Morocco's in a drought, I get it. Weather changes. Climate can shift over thousands of years. Why did they not tap the Sousse, S-O-U-S-S, aquifer and use that for irrigation? You know, Gaddafi in Libya was tapping the Nubian sandstone aquifer and bringing water resources from beneath the earth to go out and irrigate hundreds of thousands of hectares. So multiply by 2.4 for acreage. And they were doing sorghum crop out in the desert. So what they'd mapped out is previous estuary drain off areas in southern Libya. And they were putting in re-spilling water out there from that aquifer that's, you know, thousands of cubic kilometers of water beneath the earth. So I look at this and I say, this is the very same problem that Kazakhstan has. They say they have these vast natural resources under their feet, all these gas fields, but they just can't get to it, and there's shortages because they can't produce enough electricity with all this literal trillions of cubic meters of gas sitting right under them. Well, this is the same thing. I just don't get it. How has Morocco in the last 20 years not gone on at least a minimal agricultural drilling for water resources that are continually replenished? You know, here in the middle of the United States with some of the aquifers, it takes 100 years for it to come from, say, the Gulf of Mexico or the Pacific Ocean to replenish that along with the groundwater or that's seeping in from the surface after rains. Got to realize Morocco's right on the Mediterranean Sea and the Atlantic. It is having two sides replenish it through that sandstone strata being filtered, removing the salt as it comes in some 50 to 100 miles, continually replenished off the Atlantic and the Mediterranean. Gaddafi was super excited, praising, jumping to the high heavens, saying, thank you, Lord, for giving us so much water that's continually replenished just from the Mediterranean Sea. They understood the mechanics of the refill, the filtering coming off of. So they demarcated what was sort of brackish. Even if you drilled into it, even though it was in, you know, 30 miles from the coast, it was still brackish. Even down in the substrate where they were removing the water. So they would come in about 100 miles. And, you know, the further you got away from that, the more pure the water was. But they were finding as soon as you pulled it out, it was just refilled. Primary water. So I'm really curious why Morocco hasn't gone to the same, because the Nubian sandstone aquifer under the earth connects to this Sousse aquifer. There's an entire band across there that Tunisia, you know, northern Chad and a few other countries could take advantage of for below groundwater resources here across the Saharan Desert. So Niger also was in conjunction working with Libya at that southern portion where the previous African megalakes were. That's why as the megalakes dried out, they became estuaries. And if you could refill some of these same areas, gravity would take over for you and irrigate croplands. So, you know, step back 6,000 years where the African megalakes were. 4,000 years. 3,000 years. Now, the water's going to pool in the same exact areas. Now, whoever controls this area here is going to control the world's food supply moving forward. So this is another hot spot to look for, and it is that Kazakhstan will be next, and this whole Sahel area will be in the new ag zone set up. It's going to have to be decentralized power and use of some sort of stablecoin, decentralized stablecoin, to be able to pay everybody who's working, that they could, you know, earn their money and just go back to their own individual nations with stablecoins to be able to convert to their local currency. Once you get those two things, decentralized power, you get the irrigation in there, you're looking at the world's largest grow zone there. It exceeds the United States in terms of size and acreage. So since we're talking about the spring planting season and a lot of agriculture, you know, some of you out there are going, well, tell us something useful about the ag. Okay. These are the six most productive fruits and vegetables for beginners. Now, those of you who grow, if it's your first time, I so applaud you. Thank you so much for getting out and getting involved. It's going to take all of us like we did with Victory Gardens to move through this. So if it's your first year to delve into any kind of gardening, thank you. You're going to be part of the solution. So the easiest ones for you to put in the ground first that are almost a no-brainer that can come up, windsap apples. If you're going to plant an orchard, go for the windsap, at least down here in the Southeast U.S. Bush beans, those are real easy to grow. You don't even need any trellising. Cucumbers. The peppers, those are great. And tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes for us had the best result. You know, the larger like beefsteak tomatoes, there was a lot of water and they get some mold in there. But we found the cherry tomatoes, as long as you keep that leaf and the airflow in there, they have a massive production off those cherry tomatoes, yellow squash, and then zucchinis. Okay, maybe you don't like them. So, and you say, well, I want something that's going to produce a mega amount of veg coming off on my first year. You're going to want to go to that second list, the fastest growing. So if you're talking about in terms of putting something in the ground, yeah, you'll have to wait a little bit longer for a bush bean. But if you put arugula in, you're going to be eating salads like a month before the bush beans are ready to pick. And I like bush beans fresh, different types. Black-eyed peas, by the way, may not be on this list here, but black-eyed peas, you can just go buy them in any supermarket in those bags for like $2. It's in a little cellophane plastic bag. You can plant those, and those beans are absolutely unbelievably delicious when they're green. You just cut them up, stir fry them. But the beets also, you can eat the leaf while that's growing. So if you had the beets in the far end there, you have the radishes. You can cut those leaves, stir fry them, and also have a secondary dish while the root crop is growing. Now, obviously, don't strip all the leaves off. You know, pick a few. So if you have, you know, let's say you have 10 beet growing and 10 radish. You could probably clip two leaves, big leaves, off of each one of those. So you, that'd be a girthy handful of leaf. And they'll just replicate each day. And then you can get your method there for, you know, snipping. And then it'll regrow. And then if it gets a little lean, let it rest for a minute. Carrots, you can definitely eat all the shoots off of that. There's tons of recipes for that. So just put this in your quiver of information here. Fastest growing and then most productive. They're a little bit different, but both will help you if you're delving into gardening. And this is great here. Now, food is going to be the number one thing that's going to tip everybody over into social chaos. It'll roll here to the U.S., but it's going to be last behind all these other nations. So this is the World Bank Food Security Report. And for anybody who's out there into, let's say, emerging markets, or if your place of embarkation or debarkation, yeah, for a resource is coming out of these, your loading port is in one of these nations, your main supplier is from these nations here, I've started to do a little analysis on how I think you can pinpoint those nations that are going to go into social unrest first. And the World Bank already kind of lined it out, but they have the information, but I'm just interpreting it in a different way to show you the social unrest hotspots, or the inverse. What I would consider to be the areas that are going to remain more stable longer. Use it however way you like. Once you see the way to interpret the chart, it'll make total sense. You can use this any way, shape, or form that you would like. Some people want to bet on the chaos and know that there'll be a currency collapse and then do something with that going short in a market as well. There's many ways to look at it. I just on the ag side have a few people who were pulling barley out of Argentina, And that was the whole thing that set me on this trek here. So red is elevated percentages of food inflation. Purple is extreme, anything over 30%. Yellow is down into the manageable, and green is sitting at, there's no problem there. You're pretty much near zero or below. There could be some subtractions like Liberia. Green, 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 yellow. Okay, that for me looks really stable at the moment. But places like Burkina Faso, you know, they were red and then they turned purple. And if you look at the third entry down there, Burundi, this is a good example. They're red, which is incredibly elevated inflation, but now they're trending toward above 30% in the purple. These are the inflation hotspots that are going to lead to civil unrest first. The prices keep going up and up and up to the point where people become so agitated and their daily life needs cannot be met because it's just too much spent on food. Pakistan, 45% of all the monthly income or daily income, however you like to break it down, goes to purchasing food. That's massive. In America, we, a few years ago, before all the inflation and the COVID, we were spending around 5%, some of the lowest in the world. Now that has gone up greatly. We're about 12% now. It's a massive shift. My grandparents and my parents and almost a century coming through, including myself being alive, we ran at 5% of what we earned every month to push into food. Even in the 1970s, that didn't really run up much, maybe 8%, 9%, but it came back down after the gas crisis and all that thing alleviated. And interest rates rose, you know, came back down under 20%. Except for that little flare in time. For almost 100 years, we have been at the most minimal amount of our incomes to purchase food. Well, that is quickly changing, and we're into, you know, 10 to 13% if you look at shadow stats versus the official government figures. So let's interpret the chart here. Ethiopia, just straight up purple. Now, they don't have a band like a black if it goes up above 50. I wish they did. But Ethiopia, you know, you're looking at 41%, 43%, these sort of thing. That's just nearly impossible to have a daily life with if you're spending that much on food and the percentages are running away from you and your wages are stagnant and you're still living on $2 a day, but everything just increased 50%. That is a recipe for disaster, recipe for civil unrest. So, but Liberia, like I say, if you're looking at that, all right, they were at negative food. I like that. Go negative. Every time I buy food, it's going to cost me less and less. I'll sign me up. I'll take two. But you see it trended to yellow, which means just a little increase, under 10%. But if that continues in the same way that all these other nations do, then the yellow will eventually turn to the red, which will eventually turn to purple. So what I'm looking for in either direction is red going to purple, as for sure they're going to head into civil unrest. So off this first chart here that we have, if you're going to look for civil unrest hotspots, Burundi, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Sierra Leone would be my, and maybe in Malawi also would be my hotspots to keep your eye on for those out of that entire list. Now look at Rwanda, for example, second from the bottom. See how it was at moderate food inflation that moved to yellow and then red and then purple? That is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Running the gamut so quickly within a one-year period, people are going to be so angry. The difference is Ethiopia, they've been straggling the entire year at above 35%. So the anger is already kind of baked into the daily workings there. So if you had to choose one of these that would flare first based on, I would say Rwanda. Because the stability went to unstable in such a short amount of time that that's where the anger boils over. People have already vented their anger in Ethiopia. It's been like that for more than a year. What can they complain another time? You know, I wish they would. You know, I feel bad for somebody paying that much for food. But in terms of stability to anger to noncompliance, that happens real rapidly. Rwanda would be it right there. And Benin, I'm putting that right at the safety zone, safe. And as well as Bolivia and Bhutan, but I wanted to try to keep in Africa. So Benin is right down near Ghana and Togo. Algeria, Angola, okay. Ghana is another one down there that I would say would experience civil unrest because you notice how they've gone from moderate inflation from 17% up to 50%. That's people getting really angry. Oh, you see the electric flashing and people getting really angry at that time. So you can do this and work it through any nation or continent that you want to. There's Ghana. I had that highlighted there. And if we do jump into Asia, the People's Republic of Laos. Some people call it Laos, but the name is Lao. That would be going trending from, again, you know, 5%, 6%, suddenly 48%. People get angry, and it's within a year period. So use this the way you possibly want to interpret it. The world's your oyster, I guess. Information is information. And, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago when I was talking about the railway spill with all the dioxins, and Mike has been talking about this in super deep dive to explain how those chemicals, when they were burned, they didn't turn from the vinyl chloride. They were restructured with the heat, and they turned into different dioxin chains. So there really is no more vinyl chloride. It burned, and it changed molecular structure. So they're telling the truth. It's not there. It changed the dioxins. That's what they need to be testing for. But I found it so apropos. If you look on the front of the locomotive, what do you see on the very front there? The black horse. You can't tell me that that's just a coincidence, that they're setting up for one of the largest land destructions in one of the most fertile areas of crop zone in America. And you have the horse of the famine, the black horse, on the very carriage and carrier that caused the environmental disaster that's going to take off part of America's farmland. You can't make that up. I really cannot even. I sat there for a few minutes when I was putting the slide when I, like, really? They're broadcasting it that in your face. Yeah, black horse, we're going to create the famine. We're going to take your farmlands off. But I bet, again, they'll have some nanobot remediation that Gates will own, and they'll buy up and swoop up all that farmland for one penny on the dollar. And they'll own literally two states of farmland in Pennsylvania and Ohio that they bought for $4. And they'll set all these nanobots to clean it out and show what a great, and they'll own all this farmland. Something like that I would anticipate, you know, just the nefariousness of those characters anyway is beyond compare. So, you know, thinking about crop production, you could talk about it in many ways, shapes, and forms, but I really do have some solid numbers now. Crop production in the Southern Hemisphere is absolutely getting to the failure rate at this point, where once these numbers are calculated, there's going to be a lot more price increases in food. Really, there are going to be. It's just going to take a few more months. Now, the farmers in Brazil in Mato Grosso, they were trying to get the second corn crop, which is actually the largest crop. First corn crop in Brazil is the smallest of the crops. Second corn crop is the largest crop. They're behind. It's just so wet that they can't get it in the field. And they're worried about the seeds rotting before they germinate. So rain's been delaying the field. You can see where the red line is on where they sit on the different averages there. Well below. Now, if it continues, and as I believe it's going to continue, it's going to rapidly cool, setting into fall, and it's going to get even wetter, and they're going to lose 30 to 40% of their planted corn. Now, the food price rises, and civil unrest is also occurring in Brazil. In addition to the election woes and all of this political happenstance, look at what the Sao Paulo food inflation is running. You know, since January 15th, it went from 300 to 800. It's more than doubling. People, again, you know, they get pretty angry when their food prices double. Not even up 50%, doubling. And the food index, if you look at that back, what, January 2021 was around 300 and it moved to 600, doubling. That's every possible food. So when they're talking their CRB food index, that's all the basic food staples lumped into one basket as a percentage, versus just the food inflation in Sao Paulo itself. And as we look at the temperatures across Sao Paulo, third coldest in 50 years. And this is why I'm saying in these areas like Rio Grande do Sul, they were already record cold and having massive, massive cold damage and wet events that's limiting production. So, you know, looking at this February 1819, this is in the middle of the summer in the Southern Hemisphere, and look at this record. Look at that cold, 15 degrees, 20 degrees Fahrenheit below normal. Now you can imagine the amount of precipitation that's gonna come down and start ruining crops here. Argentina's soy production, down, down, down. They keep revising it, and that's gonna continue down. 23 is gonna be even lower than that. It's gonna be minus 25%, as well as the barley. And if we look at the weekly averages here, the weekly outlook, Soy previously forecast is dropping from 43 million tons to 38 million tons. That's a huge drop in a single month. And then if you look at the corn in the second bar, dropping from 52 million tons to 44 million tons. That's like a 10 million ton difference, or 20% of their total crop. Yeah, this is happening everywhere on the planet. The cold continues through February. And what I wanted to show you here, what looks like an electrical magnetic field line, that whatever weather patterns seem to be following it, and you can see how it spins into a vortex as it goes down. But for me, I'm looking at an electromagnetic or a magnetic field line on the planet illuminated following clouds, or the clouds are following the magnetic field line. And if you look right in Australia, you'll see the exact same thing, part of a magnetic field line in the following. So New Zealand got hit with this all-time record rain, and we have absolutely entered the time clock. Cycles up. Perhaps we should learn something from the ancients about distributed power as our food source goes bye-bye. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now.